You're tuned to Perspectives, a weekly show which airs every Saturday and Sunday right here on KTEP. And joining us today is reporter Hugh Ainsworth. He is a four-times Pulitzer finalist. He was 32 years old when he worked for the Dallas Morning News as a reporter. And 50 years ago in November is going to be the anniversary of the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. Mr. Ainsworth, as I mentioned, was a reporter for the Dallas Morning News. However, his beat was actually covering something that was very hot at the time, and that was the NASA program. And if you remember, it was President Kennedy who said, we choose to go to the moon. And he made that speech, and Mr. Ainsworth was the space reporter. So you had a pretty interesting beat, sir.
I think I had the best beat on the paper, really, at that time. I was at Cape Canaveral often and other places where they were building the various rockets and equipment, you know.
As far as that day, when the president was coming to town, and incidentally, he was apparently here in El Paso in June of 63. He went to White Sands Missile Range, Colorado Springs before that, and he spent the night here in El Paso planning the Dallas trip. But a lot of people were against that trip, and he decided that he wanted to make it because it was an election year. And I also read Mr. Hill's book, Me and Mrs. Kennedy, her secret agent service member. And you wrote the book November 22nd, 1963, Witness to History. And as I mentioned, you were the space coverage. That was your beat. But you were, I don't want to say off, because reporters are never off, but you really didn't have an assignment that day.
No, I didn't have an assignment. But, you know, it isn't every day the president comes to your town. So after everyone else had cleared out to get to their stations, why, I thought I'd just walk over from the Dallas News to the parade site. And it was only four blocks to where I went. And the crowd was so excited that day. It was just a fine day.
Now, as far as because you were a reporter and you are a reporter, because once you're a journalist, you're always a journalist. As far as going that way, did you have credentials so that you could watch the president's motorcade from wherever you wanted to?
No, there were no credentials at that time. And it came right down through. The motorcade came through Main Street all the way down, and the crowds were deep. There were seven and eight deep in some places. And it was really an exciting situation.
It's kind of interesting, and it's eerie in a way. A lot of comparisons that have been made, and I'm sure you've heard them, between the assassination of President Lincoln and the assassination of President Kennedy, because before President Lincoln was shot, as you know, he had that dream, and he said that any nut could shoot him if they wanted to.
Right.
And apparently, President Kennedy made the same comment to Mrs. Kennedy the night before in Fort Worth.
He did. It was a rainy night, and they were jostled around quite a bit as they landed very late at night. And he said, what a night. You know, if someone could have been there with a gun, they could have shot anybody. That's true.
And as far as the trip to Dallas, for people who may wonder, why did he go to Dallas? There was political rift, correct? And he was trying to mend that because of the 1964 election?
Right. They had a tremendous rift between the conservative Democrats and the liberal Democrats. And Ralph Yarborough was the head of the bloc of liberals. John Connally and LBJ were the more conservative. And they knew they had to get together or he next year would lose Texas. And to lose Texas would have probably cost him the 1964 election.
Now, there's a lot of talk, and it's not a secret, that LBJ and the Kennedy brothers did not particularly get along, especially Robert Kennedy.
That's true, particularly Robert, but also with JFK, because if you go back and look at the transcripts of the Cuban Missile Crisis, where the Security Council met and we had this tete-a-tete with Russia, and We didn't know how that was going to come out. Lyndon Johnson wasn't allowed to say anything in the whole week long. How about he didn't say 20 words the whole week? And they were shoving him out in every way possible. And he was trying to ingratiate himself with newspaper people in Texas, the editors of Houston, Dallas, Fort Worth, and he was calling them regularly and informing them what was going on.
Is this pretty much, would you compare this to the situation that President Truman relationship had with President Roosevelt? Because when President Roosevelt passed away, all of a sudden, Harry Truman, President Truman, they said, here, you're in charge.
Yeah, I don't think it was exactly the same. I think that Truman was not geared in and they didn't share much with him. In fact, he didn't know about the bomb until after he was sworn in. The secret, the program that developed the atom bomb.
Tell us a little bit about it. This is interesting because a lot of people are going, what? Are you kidding me? On page 41 of your book, and again, the book is November 22nd, 1963, Witness to History by Hugh Ainsworth. You talk a little bit about Max Holland's book, The Kennedy Assassination Tapes. And on that page, on page 41 of your book, not Mr. Holland's book, you say that LBJ was assured by Edgar Hoover from the FBI that they had charged Oswald with murder when at that time it was not a federal crime to shoot the president.
No, it was not a crime. It was a simple murder case in Texas.
Why was that? Why was that?
Well, J. Edgar Hoover was misinformed so badly that weekend. For instance, when LBJ asked him how Oswald got out of the building and what happened and how did he shoot a cop, J. Edgar Hoover told him, well, he came out the door and he met this cop and he shot and killed him and then he ran over to Oak Cliff. Well, of course, that isn't the way it happened. He got on a bus and it stalled. He got on in a taxi, took him to his rooming house where he got his pistol, and then he went about a half a mile and killed the cop. But see, Hoover was completely out of it. In fact, Oswald had another name that he used, Heidel. And LBJ said, what about this Heidel? Who's that? And Hoover told him it was a woman. So, I mean, he was just out of it all the way.
Now, as you mentioned in your book as well, 1963 was pretty primitive for reporters because basically it was pencil and paper. And it was not until the assassination of the president that electronic media television basically came of age. And so you guys had to rely on whatever happened as far as some of the live shots and everything else that was happening, you were learning on the spot. And when you watch that documentary that was done by Chris Boyd, you see that some of these reporters are learning on the spot.
That's very true. It was touch and go. And the only way, there were no cell phones. You had to find a pay phone if you were out somewhere covering a story. And in this case, we had to stay close to the police radios, because that's the only way. And that enabled me to get to various places, because I overheard the fact that a citizen said a cop had been shot. And I thought, well, this is only 3 or 4 miles from where I am. Somebody shoots at the president. Somebody shoots a cop. It's got to be connected in some way.
Let's go back a little bit, because one of the things that happened over those 2 days was that the Dallas Morning News, they had an editorial, and it said, welcome to Dallas, Mr. President. But it was almost like read the fine print.
Oh, it was a horrible thing. It was not an editorial. It was a full-page ad paid for by some of the people that didn't like Kennedy, and the Hunt family was involved. And it was just horrible. All the people that I talked with that morning, we were just chagrined. We were upset. You know, it shouldn't have been allowed.
And some people were not aware that one of those people behind that letter was also Bum Bright, who went on to own the Dallas Cowboys.
Right.
Tell me a little bit about what We'll take us through the steps that you had, Mr. Ainsworth. When you said it's not every day the president comes to town, you didn't have an assignment, so you were going to watch the presidential motorcade. Tell us what happened or what you remember from that day.
Well, I walked over. It was only four blocks to where the motorcade was, and I walked over, and I couldn't get close because, as I said, they were 7 or 8 deep, so I kept going on toward the end of the route, which led me to the book depository building. I was right there. I could have looked up at 1 o'clock and seen at 1 or 2 o'clock and seen him in the window, but I didn't. I was excited watching the crowd. Everyone was saying, "Oh, look at Jackie. Isn't she beautiful?" And the Connollys and the Kennedys were so happy. They went by me, and then I was only there 5 or 10 minutes till they went by. And then seconds later, I heard a motorcycle backfire, I thought. But it wasn't a motorcycle. It was the first shot. And then two others that I identified knew they were rifle shots. There's a different, you know, you hear a whine of a rifle shot. And then it was just total chaos. It just, people went wild. We didn't know who was shooting, how many were shooting, where they were shooting from. We knew nothing. All we knew is the motorcade sped up and got out of there. Some of the reporters jumped out of the cars when they were 6 and 7, 8 cars back. And then people bumped into each other. People were crying. People were throwing their kids on the ground and covering them. It was just total chaos.
So you don't remember seeing the president get hit?
I did not, because as you turned left on Elm Street, it veers down. It the elevation slowly goes down. He was out of sight. He was only four cars away, but he was still out of sight to me.
And so when you said you heard those three shots, or at first you thought it was a motorcycle backfiring, then the three shots, after that comes, I guess, what we hear are the various conspiracy theories. And I guess the first one was, oh my gosh, I can't remember the author's name now. It just slipped from me. Mr. Stahl, was it not?
No, that was the guy that met me at home that night.
Okay.
He had this big conspiracy, and he said, you know, they got him fired because he told them that was what was going to happen, what was going on. It was a pitiful thing. And later, he was so enamored with that conspiracy thought of his that I saw him over in New Orleans helping Jim Garrison 3 years, 4 years later.
And what about the fact that, you know, you talked about Mr. Hoover and the fact that he was kind of out of the loop? Another one of those theories, or if you want to call it things that perhaps went through the grapevine, is that the vice president at that time, because I believe he might have been sworn in already, was that he was told by Mr. Hoover that they had found a bullet on JFK's gurney.
Right. That was another thing. But a lot of people, we'd never come across anything like this. We had Pearl Harbor, but that was different. It only affected the military, and we didn't know, you know, we went to war, of course, but it wasn't a huge thing where people thought their lives were in danger here in the States. And, of course, you had 9/11 later, which horrendous situation. But this was the biggest thing that had happened in most of our lifetimes. So a lot of people reacted badly. For instance, the district attorney, Henry Wade, was asked how Oswald got from the depository building to Oak Cliff. And he said, well, he took a cab. Well, naturally, the reporter said, who is the cab driver? Who is the cab driver? Because they wanted to interview him, you know. And he said, Darryl Click. To this day, there has never been a cab driver named Darryl Click in Dallas, Texas. And about 5 days after that, I wrote a story identifying the cab driver. But see, that shouldn't have been made. Now, when they got the rifle, they pulled the rifle out. This cop had got it out. It was stuck between some books. He pulled it up and held it up so everybody could see it. somebody, a deputy sheriff, and I forget his name, said, "Oh, that looks like a Mauser." Well, it wasn't a Mauser. It was a Mannlicher Kirkano. But you see there, a lot of reporters heard that. The first reports were, it's a Mauser. So, you know, they're lying to us again. That's how these things started.
And because of I guess, you didn't have all the information because, as you mentioned, there was no social media, no Twitter, no Facebook, etc. Pencil and paper, period. In fact, you ended up buying a pencil from a little boy for 50 cents, correct?
Well, I didn't really buy it. I just sort of jerked it out of his hand and put two quarters and ran. I didn't have anything to write with.
And as far as the information, some people wonder, with all the reporters there, all the media covering the presidential visit, why did we not have one single shot or video, pardon the pun, video of the president being shot except for Abraham Zapruder?
Well, I guess that most of the people were shooting. At that point, he had just turned onto Elm Street and was veering down to the underpass. And most of the people were shooting behind him, and then he was out of sight suddenly. I couldn't see him. And I don't know, there were some people that shot. There were four or five shots, but they really don't show anything. And there's nothing with Oswald in the window, although there was a good eyewitness to that.
Were you able to talk to Oswald's wife and his mother?
I've talked to them. Well, his mother is dead, but... And his wife I talked with last week, and his brother in Wichita Falls I talked to quite regularly. He's a fine man. Yes, I've kept in touch with all these people.
Some people said that the reason that Jack Ruby, or Rubenstein as was his real name, shot Oswald, and incidentally, for people who may not know, I believe this was the first murder on live television, correct?
I believe so, yes.
Well, anyway, he apparently said that the reason he had shot Oswald is because he didn't want Mrs. Kennedy to have to go through the trauma of testifying or anything like that.
Well, that's one of many things that Jack Ruby said. Jack Ruby was not a very nice person. I knew him a couple of years before that. And he was a show-off and a braggart and a sort of an oaf, really. He was, every time you had a fire, every time you had a police raid, every time that anything big happened, Ruby'd be there.
He was a news
just
groupie.
Just so he could know and then go tell other people.
So he was a news groupie, basically.
He was more than that. That's putting it mildly.
Okay. Now, what about all these years later, you're thinking back and people are going, how in the world did we not stop this or put a law? Because President Lincoln, President McKinley, President Garfield were all assassinated. And until President Kennedy, again, it was still not a federal law to kill the president.
That's true. It became law a couple of weeks later, I think.
Tell us about what happened after the shooting. Did you go to Parkland, Mr. Ainsworth?
I never went to Parkland that whole weekend, no. After I left there, I just sort of had a supposition that the cop killing and the president's situation was, you know, connected. I ran with two Channel 8, that's WFAA TV, mobile units, and I went to Oak Cliff, interviewed all the people there, six or eight witnesses who either saw him shoot the cop or saw him run from the scene or saw him throw shells away. And then we found out later that a few minutes later he was in the Texas Theater. We didn't know who he was at that time, and we really didn't know the president was dead yet when we were running toward that theater. But I got in the theater just over another 5-10 minutes ahead of time. Went into the first door, and I saw the cops, a couple of them uniformed, a couple of them plain clothes, coming up the two aisles. And they jumped on Oswald and wrestled him to the ground. He said, I did not hear this, but the cops that afternoon told me that he said, well, it's all over now. But it wasn't, because he pulled a pistol out and tried to kill Mr. McDonald, the cop that jumped him first. Donald got his hand caught in the mechanism, which saved his life.
As far as reporting, you being a journalist for many years, and I've been a journalist, and now I teach journalism for the past 34 years. I've taught journalism now for 23 years, and my producer has been in television news for a long time. And so there are a lot of stories that we remember that come back to us. But you, of course, as we mentioned, you had this awful story to cover. But at the same time, you knew you had to do your job and do your best. Tell us as far as what you remember and still haunts you to this day.
Well, it's the strangest thing. This doesn't happen very often, but every maybe 5 years, I guess, I'll wake up, I'll be in a dream, and the sequence part of this is, coming up again. I wake up, sweating and a couple of times screaming. It doesn't happen often, but it's still there. Somehow I don't understand it, but that was a moment that or a few hours that I won't forget.
Mr. Ainsworth, there was a lot of controversy, of course, of what happened during this assassination, and there still is, even after the Warren Report. just as there was controversy after the Lincoln assassination, although everybody saw John Wilkes Booth do it. As far as the assassination goes, and from what you remember, how did that change news? How did the coverage of the JFK assassination change the way we cover news?
Well, I think particularly one of the first things is that the coverage of the news changed in that it used to be the press guys had a complete access to the police. You could go in, you could find out everything they were doing, where they were going, everything. And this changed that because things became tighter. There was so much criticism of the cops, and justifiably so. But it did change the way that the locals covered things.
I've noticed that a lot of the reporters who covered this event, this was almost like their stepping stone to go on to bigger and better places, including Bob Schieffer, Dan Rather, Bob Lehr, etc.
Yeah, it's changed across the board, really.
When did you decide to write this book? Because this,
everywhere I've ever worked, I've had to cover every conspiracy theory that ever came up. I was with Newsweek. I was with 2020. I was with the Washington Times. I was with UPI. I was with the Dallas Times Herald. And everywhere over the 50 years, I had to run down these rather unusual conspiracy theories.
Now, wasn't there a memo that was seen or heard about floating around before the president went to Dallas, warning him not to go?
I'm not sure that
I think there's a
memo. There were flyers around town, very hateful, but I don't think it was any warning.
Because I believe there's a picture in your book, but I'm trying to find it, and I just can't find it right now. But as far as the president being warned and the fact that he was so popular, even though a lot of people said, in fact, the First Lady of Texas, Mrs. Connolly, turned around and said, "You can't say Dallas doesn't love you, Mr. President."
Right, right.
Now, after that, what was the reaction to Dallas, Texas in general, and LBJ being president, especially being from Texas?
Well, Dallas took a pretty hard hit, and somewhat unfairly so. There's nothing ever happened quite this large before, and some of the public officials reacted badly and stupidly. But and I think that the kicker was when they allow Oswald to be killed. I mean, they were taking enough hit for having a right-wing community here that made it, unpopular to be a Kennedy person. But then when Oswald was killed, that was just double indemnity,
As far as martyrs, sometimes some people say, well, the reason JFK was so popular is because he was assassinated. If he had not been assassinated, it would have been interesting to see what have happened. Especially if he had lost Texas, of course, he wouldn't have been reelected. But there's a documentary out there called Virtual Vietnam, and it talks about the many times that President Kennedy got us out of war, from the Cuban Missile Crisis to
right.
Vietnam not escalating the way it did with President Johnson, et cetera.
Right.
What are your views on that as a reporter?
I don't know. I think that probably Kennedy would have gotten us out of Vietnam. He certainly wouldn't have gone in like LBJ did and double up. But I think that Johnson got some things through Congress, and I'm thinking particularly of civil rights bill, that Kennedy could not. He did not have the power to do it. He just did not have the old cronies that Lyndon called on to get that through, and it was rather amazing what LBJ did accomplish.
Mr. Ainsworth, is your book available as an e-book or a Kindle book as well?
Yes, it is. Amazon has it, and I don't understand exactly where all it is, but it's everywhere.
Okay, the name of the book again is November 22nd, 1963, Witness to History, and it is by Hugh Ainsworth. Mr. Ainsworth was 32 years old at the time. He was a reporter with the Dallas Morning News. He's a four-time Pulitzer finalist. And, of course, as we mentioned, he was there when the president was assassinated, and he was a witness to history. And that's the name of the book, and it's available on Amazon.com and, of course, any bookstore. Or you can just Google the book, and you'll see a lot of interesting reviews from a lot of news people like Bob Schieffer and Dan Rather and other people who have read the book. And it's a very interesting read. It's not, academic. It's not a hard-to-read book. Very interesting. Mr. Ainsworth, thank you very much for taking time out of your busy schedule for joining us, and thank you for sharing with us your memory, and I'm sure that you have some great stories to tell your grandkids.
Yes, I think they've already heard them many times. But thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Enjoyed it.
Thank you. We've been visiting with Hugh Ainsworth. He is the author of November 22nd, 1963, Witness to History, and it is available on Amazon.com or any other bookstore as a book, hardback, or Kindle, or ebook.
If you missed any part of this episode, you may listen to it online under the Perspectives Programs Archives on KTEP.org or listen to the replay tomorrow at 12:30 on 88.5 FM KTEP and on the web at KTEP.org.
We've been visiting with Hugh Ainsworth. He is the author of November 22nd, 1963, Witness to History, and the book is available online. Or if you go to Amazon.com, and it is available in all formats, including the ebook and Kindle. Perspectives is taped and produced at the KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer and producer, Dennis Wu. You've been tuned to Perspectives. I'm Louis Sines.